Playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Fred and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sports book.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Looks like a clinic on how not to do things on the baseball field.
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz.
Brought to you by Big Y Grocery Store, T-Mobile, Needham Bank, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Jordan's Furniture, Integrity from Marvin Windows and Doors, TestTrips.com, Acura of Auburn, Anderson McQuay, Direct Federal Credit Union, Gravely Lawnmowers, AceTicket.com, WFXD-TV, and Mohegan Sun.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Okay, welcome into the Baseball Reporters. You know, years ago when I used to cover baseball, Murray, people used to ask me, I said, you know what the best part of covering baseball is? There's a game every day. Right? I think I've told you this before, right? So, because you always had material to write about. There was always a game, always a development. There was never a shortage. The worst part about covering baseball was that there's a game every day. Is it ride your ass right into the ground? It just burned you out.
162 can feel like 450.
Absolutely. I mean, it's tough. And again, you add spring training on top of it, and then the postseason, you're really going like 8 months pretty much, you know, at the ballpark every day. So it can wear you out. Unless it's mid-August 2018 and the Red Sox have played twice in 5 days. That's what it feels like. So there haven't been a lot of games to talk about this week, but we will get to the Red Sox nonetheless. 617-779-0985, and I have two really simple thoughts or questions here at the beginning of the program for Red Sox fans out there as they open a three-game series against the Tampa Bay Rays at Fenway Park. And let me just get some of the news out of the way. Ian Kinsler has been activated from the disabled list. Rafael Devers back on the DL. Okay, Alex Cora addressed the Devers situation over at Fenway Park a short time ago. We'll play that for you a little bit later in the program. But Devers back on the DL. Kinsler is off the DL. And so, you know, the Red Sox get back one infielder. They lose another. And I think you're going to see a lot of this, frankly, down the stretch as the Red Sox go down the final 6 weeks of the season here. I think they have, 40 games left? 80, I think it's exactly 40 to go. So you have to think of it in these terms. Is they're at the three-quarter mile pole of the season, right? They literally have three-quarters of the season's in the books. The Red Sox are on pace for 114 wins. They're not being threatened in the division. And so I think you're going to see them manage their roster for health here down the stretch. That said, a couple of questions. Number one, the ratings for the games in Philadelphia this week, the TV ratings, again, very, very high. They were over 9, both games. Now, the Phillies are a pretty good team, but I was interested in this, Murray, because the last time I checked this was that week where they played the Phillies and the Yankees. And I'm interested in it because with the Yankees, to me, there's always a buzz factor. And so I thought that maybe the ratings for the games with the Phillies that week had as much to do with the Yankees coming to town and people knew that the games meant something. And, hey, I'm going to sink my teeth into the Red Sox this week. I'm going to watch them play the Phillies at the beginning of the week and then the Yankees come in and we'll see how it goes. The Phillies ratings this week were every bit as high as they were when they were in Boston. And so my question to you as a Red Sox fan is what is drawing you to the team? Right now, what is drawing you to watch? I'm just curious. Because they're on a record-setting pace. The division is not really in play. I mean, they're going to win it. They're going to win the division. And everyone who keeps bringing up 1978 to me, stop. It's not the same. It's not apples to apples. Okay? It's not the same as 1978. First of all, the wild card exists, so worst case, they're going to get into the one-game play-in. And then secondly, the league isn't nearly as good as it was in 1978 when they blew it and they had a different team, different history, different people. It's totally different. So I don't want to hear 1978. But what is it about the team that is drawing you to them right now? And if it's as simple as they're good, they're on a historic run, that's fine. I was looking for something a little deeper, that most notably that you believe in them. Is that what's sucking you to the games? Because I'd be eager to hear what you believe as a fan. Okay, that's number one. Number two, and I threw this out the other day, and I asked you, Murray. The bullpen right now, I find more and more interesting the deeper we get into the season. We're 2 weeks from the trading, deadline for postseason eligibility. If the Red Sox are going to get help for their bullpen, they have to do it in the next 14 days. If they do it after August 31st, that player is not eligible for the postseason. Now, it's not unprecedented for a team to add a reliever in September. And I say reliever. It's not unprecedented for a team to add any player in the month of September. Because there have been situations where a team says, well, we're in a battle for a playoff spot going into the final weekend of the year. We're going to make a trade and get a player just for the three games because we think it'll help get us in the playoffs, even if we can't use that guy in October. I remember Theo Epstein almost did this on the final weekend of the season 1 year. And I wished for the life of me I could remember who the hell it was, and I can't remember. But there have been GMs that have made similar kinds of moves. Nonetheless, if the Red Sox are going to do it, they have to do it soon. And the other side of this is that I think they're going to be hard-pressed to find any bullpen help than what they already have. And so depending on who you sort of throw into the pile of relievers that they could use in the month of October, the primary guys really for them all year long have been Matt Barnes, Tyler Thornburg, Joe Kelly, and Heath Embry. The other guy that now factors in is Brazier, Ryan Brazier, but on Twitter, I couldn't add Brazier's name because you can only put four names on a poll question. So I put this question up on Twitter. We actually even talked about it on the website in the baseball blog that we do every week.
Behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes. Thank you, Murray. And so I am curious to the opinions of Red Sox fans on this topic. And I asked you, Murray, if it stays as is and there isn't any dramatic change in the rotation. Okay, let's say that Eduardo Rodriguez doesn't come back. Price and Evaldi are both in the rotation. That means the eighth inning guy has to be Barnes, Thornburg, Kelly, or Hembry. One of those guys has to be the guy that is the bridge from your starter to your closer. Okay, Kimbrel's going to get the ball last, and the starter's going to get it first, Sale or whoever else. Someone else is going to have to get the ball in between. And even if you limit it to one guy, the Red Sox have questions, which is really worrisome when you think about it. And to me, I put this in the context of Alex Cora. If you're Alex Cora right now, and you have to pick someone out of that group, who do you give the ball to? Barnes, Thornburg, Kelly, or Hembry? And if your answer is Brazier, I'll accept that too, and I'll give you what the poll results were here in a minute, but first, Murray, I want you to say who you would pick, and then I'll tell you who I would pick.
I would go with Barnes. I like the stuff, and at times he's looked like he can be that guy, the bridge guy to Craig Kimbrel, but lately, I don't know, if you're trying to make a case for him, it's too many balls in play. He walks too many guys, but stuff and the fact that he's done it before and been that effective eighth inning guy, I'm going with Matt Barnes by default.
Okay, and so let me just tell you what the poll results were before I tell you what I would do. Number one, and again, I could only put four people on there. Number one was Barnes at 43%. Okay, and then the rest of the guys are all low. So it was Barnes, dare I say, by a landslide. Thornburg was 24%.
Ugh.
Kelly was 20%. Hembry, 13%. Okay, so one out of five, if that, would pick any of those guys, but most people lean toward Barnes. I also would lean toward Barnes, and I would probably go Thornburg second. So I think that people, Red Sox fans, generally look at it the same way that you do, Murray, the same way that I do, and I don't know who you would put second.
Maybe Hembry. Like, so he's a roller coaster ride to me. Like, he had been getting hit hard lately, but that clean eighth he had in the first of the two-game series of Philadelphia, I was like, okay. Like, he has flashes, so I don't know. I can sometimes be convinced quickly. So that particular game, I would go with Embry right now as the two guy behind Matt Barnes.
Okay, and I think on that one it's a coin flip.
Yeah.
But I would. I'd go Barnes first right now, but the bottom line is this. I don't feel good about any of them.
No, nor should you.
And I'd be willing to bet that Alex Cora doesn't feel great about any of them. So the real important thing here to watch for the Red Sox, if you want the most important thing to watch for the Red Sox down the stretch, it's who Alex Cora trusts in the eighth inning of a close game. If Alex Cora has a bridge from his starter to Kimbrel, who is he using and when? Okay, it's the most important thing to watch down the stretch. Does he settle on one guy in that eighth inning, and that's barring a trade, or does he go night to night based on the matchup? Because if it's that second thing, then boy, that's really going to put Cora in the crosshairs in October. I mean, talk about putting a rookie manager in a spot. That would really put him in the crosshairs. So we'll get right to your calls here. Oscar is in New Hampshire. He kicks us off here on this Friday night. What do you got, Oscar?
Hey, what's going on, man? I was just calling to let you know why I watch the Red Sox. I watch the Red Sox because it's fun to watch the Red Sox beat up on teams and give them no chance, no matter how late in the game. Could be the seventh inning, eighth inning. We're down by four runs, and a couple of guys hit home runs, and we're right back in it, demoralizing the other team. And the second reason is that it feels like these players compete against each other rather than compete against other players in the league. One player goes up and hits the run, and it's like they tell the next player, let's see what you can do next. Let's see if you can make a miraculous catch.
Oscar,
see if you can steal a base.
Do you believe in the more? Do you believe in the more than you did a year ago?
I definitely do. I definitely do, because it seems like they want it more. Like they're more passionate about the game as opposed to just playing it to get the win. They're playing it for the fans. They're playing it for the future. They're playing it to give people faith in them, like the year when Ortiz got out there and swore in front of everybody and said, this is our city.
Okay.
So they give us a connection back to Boston and back to the team.
Okay, so look, Oscar, you're talking about 2013. They won it that year. And look, that was, that was obviously a special season. It was a lightning in a bottle season. I still think in a lot of ways they got lucky that year. But that's all right. Whatever. A championship is a championship is a championship. And when I say lucky, I don't think their roster was that good. I think they played way above their heads. Way, way above their heads. This team's better than that team. It is. Now, that team probably had better starting pitching, particularly in October, than this one has had. Sale, we'll see, but that team had Lester, and Lackey pitched well for them. And don't forget, Lackey also came out of the bullpen during the World Series. So different scenarios. But this team, to me, has had a longer run. I mean, they've won 93 two years in a row. They've been awful in October, but they've won 93 two years in a row. Now they're going to win 110 or whatever the number is. And that vibe that you're talking about, that they seem to want it more, I would agree. I think that is there too. But it's easy to feel that way because I think all that spins out of confidence. And when you're winning as much as they are, you're going to be really confident. Okay, you're going to think you're going to win every night, which is fine. But the real test of confidence comes when all of a sudden you're in a spot, maybe you're down 2-1 in a series, or you're down 3-2 in a series. Then we'll really know about the mental toughness. Like, you lose one game and then come back and win six in a row, your confidence is so high during the regular season that it's hard for anybody to penetrate that. The division is theirs. What happens if they get behind in October? Do you believe in their confidence then? Because to me, that's if it's real, if that vibe and that feeling around them is real, that's when we're going to see it. Okay? 617-779-0985. When we come back, we'll touch on the injury situation. Chris Gasper of the Globe, maybe it was Gasper, maybe it was Perillo, I don't remember. One of them said something to me off the air. I usually just steal the ideas as my own. But one of them said something to me off the air regarding the injury situation that I think is worth touching on when we get back.
From the field.
You're the one who threw the pitch.
To the clubhouse.
They're a reliever short.
To the corner office.
That sends all the wrong messages.
We have the Sox covered.
Because that's the way I look at it.
The baseball reporters on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
He felt that in Baltimore, we tried to like take care of his workload. I kind of like noticed it in that infield hit in Philly, the last one. He kept stretching and stretching and stretching. I was like, there's something going on here. And I talked to him today a little bit for how how bad these guys want to play, you got to be smart. We need to avoid this. Going to the DL is not, like, the greatest thing. But he's willing to play and then play through it. I get it, but at the same time, we have to be smart.
It's Alex Cora talking about Rafael Devers, who went back on the disabled list today. Murray, you want a conspiracy theory?
Yeah, please.
So Devers has now gone on and off the DL here a few times, right? I mean, it's like this little, you know, shuttle, for crying out loud, that they've been running Devers back and from the active roster. And so it could be that just he has a hamstring issue, which he clearly does. Okay, I'm not debating the hamstring issue. The question is whether or not it's bad enough that he can't play through it, or it'll get better with rest or what have you. What I'm starting to wonder is whether or not they want to get him out of the lineup to see for an extended period of time when some other guys look like at third base.
Well, would you blame him?
No. So I'm starting to wonder, and again, this is purely speculative. I'm not telling you I have any inside info.
He was a butcher there the other night.
But I'm starting to wonder whether or not they would trust Devers in the postseason. And so they got a lot at stake. I mean, it's a good team.
I mean, they'd want his bat, but do you think that his bad defense really outweighs it that much?
So I don't know. I mean, if Nunez starts to hit,
and which he kind of has.
Okay, and Nunez, and, you know, I mean, like, hit like he hit last year, like, yeah. Get hot. Who would you rather have, a hot Nunez at third or Devers?
Well, it's not like Nunez has been all that great defensively this year either, but I would trust Nunez more than I would Devers. Devers, to use your term, he's been a butcher.
So now, look, ultimately, I suppose they both on the roster, and if you wanted to play Nunez, you play and keep Devers off. But I'm starting to wonder about Devers at all. I mean, you know, and maybe this is a way to let him down easy or something. I just, the back and forth with the roster, I don't get. Like, and the other thing is, you know, rosters are going to expand here on September 1st. So I suppose, you know, you still get 2 weeks. You put him on for 10 days. You have the extra body. But I don't know. It's just something to watch.
No, it's funny because I knew where you were going to go. I don't think it was a conspiracy theory. When I saw this news pop up today, you know, because he was so bad the other night, I figured we're going to try to get him right now.
So I just wonder how hurt he really is.
Yeah, agreed.
Because they're so far up, they can try some other things right now, and I think that that's what they're doing. And
well,
this
to me is the only thing that's really going to be interesting for this team between now and the end of September is how they manage guys, how they're going to rest some guys, because certain guys are going to need it. You know, if this can help him and get him right for the postseason, fine. You know, bang for 10 days. Craig Kimbrell, I wouldn't even mind seeing out for a little bit to get his head right. You know, the word is that he's talked to Dana Lavangi, and Lavangi's figured out what the problem has been with the fastball, the location and everything. Okay, you know, go figure that out if you have to and miss a little bit of time. Like, get these guys right for the postseason.
Oh, and I think you're going to see them do that. I do. We'll get back to your calls here quickly, but just Baseball Reporters is brought to you by Mohegan Sun. Unlimited possibilities await you at Mohegan Sun. Plan your stay at MohiganSun.com. So we'll get right back to your phone calls here again, 617-779-0985. Rob's in Holliston. What do you got, Rob?
Hi, guys. It's hard to believe it's been only 5 years since 2013. It seems longer. But a couple of similarities between this year and then. One, they have the new manager. Now, Farrell was not a rookie, but he Cora, like Farrell, you know, was here before, you know, as a player. And another thing is, I thought they had a decent offseason, including signing a big bat, you know, to knock people in. So I thought those were a couple of similarities between the two seasons. What do you think?
So, Rob, let me ask you quickly before I let you go. Which team do you think is better? Like, if they played and you had to pick between the 2013 Red Sox and this one, who do you think would win?
Tony, I actually, after the, you know, I'm senile. I can't remember the guy they signed from Texas to, the guy, he turned out to be awesome. He was injured. He had a back problem, blah, blah, blah. But I was very confident.
Oh, Napoli. You're talking about Mike Napoli.
Napoli, thank you. I was very confident that the 2013 team had a very good chance to go all the way. I felt that way after the offseason. They had veterans who had been there before. They were good. Things did work out for them. The pitching worked out. Lackey came back strong, but I feel the 2013 was stronger. I felt they were a good team throughout.
Okay, Rob, I'm gonna let you go just because I want to get to some other people. If you thought the 2013 team was championship caliber going into the season, then you, my friend, are a hopeless optimist. Like, I'm just, you know, I thought that that team was an 85-win team, max. I thought they were a B-minus team. They would compete hard. They would hang in there, but they weren't going to make the playoffs, and they weren't going to win anything. And you know what? Honestly, I think the Red Sox agreed with me. I think all they wanted that year after Bobby Valentine and everything else is they wanted a team that played hard, was stable, and was likable. They got a World Series out of it, which honestly, I think kind of screwed things up because they finished last place the next 2 years. And the whole thing got out of whack. And so I think they started to actually believe there was a way to win doing it that way, and I don't think there is. I think that what they have now is more sustainable. Cyrus is in a car. Cyrus, go.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
I, like you guys, am very afraid of the bullpen, and I know Cincinnati was looking to deal Matt Harvey. What would you guys think about the Red Sox trying to trade for him in the next all and move him to the bullpen? I'll hang up and listen to what you guys have to say.
Okay, so Cyrus, I haven't watched a lot of Matt Harvey this year. I'm open to just about anything and everything, but Matt Harvey's one of the few places I would say no. So now look, again, would you take a shot? Sure. Do I think it would work? No. Murray, I am so concerned about their eighth inning that I heard today that Phil Hughes, the guy who was a right-hander with the Yankees, and then 1 year I think he went like 18-8 or something with either the Yankees or the Twins. Phil Hughes, I heard, got released by the Padres. I looked up his numbers today, and you know why? Because what I remember about Phil Hughes is that he throws strikes. You know what? If one of you guys has a chance, look it up, right? See what his walks per nine were. One of those years, he walked like nobody. But then I saw that he gave up 7 home runs in 20 innings. I said, thanks, but no thanks. Like, I don't know if he's throwing hard anymore. It feels like he sucks now. But I am so worried about their reliever's ability to throw strikes that I was willing to pause on Phil Hughes, for crying out loud. Rob's in Rhode Island. Rob, what do you got?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I want to get your opinion on the Paw Sox moving to Worcester. Also, with Pomeranz losing his confidence, what would you think about them sending him down, bringing up Mike Shore in from Pawtucket, and what they're relieving, bring up Josh Smith.
Okay, so Rob, you're breaking up, and I missed the beginning of his call because Mason Souza, our producer, was telling me something in my ear as well. But was he saying he's upset that the team's leaving Pawtucket? Did you guys catch that?
No, I barely could hear that call. I'm looking up at Phil Hughes' numbers here. Sorry.
Okay, so the news today, obviously, is that the move to Worcester was official for the Pawtucket Red Sox. So if you're a minor league fan, the Red Sox are going to be moving from Pawtucket to Worcester. The hope is that the stadium will be ready by 2021. Okay, they're going to build a new stadium for the team in Worcester. Now, I'll just tell you this quickly because a lot of people care about minor league baseball. I've always been more of a major league fan, but I have an obvious interest in the Red Sox affiliates and more specifically how their minor leaguers are doing at those levels. And I don't think it's a huge change for the Red Sox. You know, whether you're in Worcester and Pawtucket, you're close. So to me, that's the most important thing. How fast can a player get here if you need a call up? That's always what I've been interested in. It's the only thing I'm interested in. And certainly, look, having them in the state versus in Rhode Island, of course. If it's good for the state of Massachusetts, great, I'm in. Okay, fine. But I'm more interested in the baseball perspective. However, I will say this. The people who owned, operated, and ran the Paw Sox for a long, long time, from the Mondor family and then the executives down there, Tamburo and Lou Schweckenheimer, I think his name was. I always get his last name wrong. Where they couldn't have run a more, what's the right word? Professional.
Classy.
Yes. Tactful, gracious. They could not have been better over the years. And so, you know, from that standpoint, I think there is a little bit of an end of an era there. And the Red Sox have been in Pawtucket a long time. So I do have compassion for the people down there that are affected by it. No commercials here. Or rather, Murray will get you caught up on headlines when we come back. There was an interesting story in Major League Baseball the other night that sent Murray into orbit. And again, he and I were on the same page on this. Because the day after it happened, we came in and we talked about it. And it was the kind of thing that would irritate you if you're a baseball fan. We'll touch on that next.
We have the Sox color socks covered. This is the Baseball Reporter. Tony Mazzarotta, show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Acuna's hit 12 homers, 24 RBIs, and 25 runs scored leading off. And he got smoked on the very first pitch. Chad Fairchild right out in front of the plate. Acuna tosses the helmet down. And now in a crouch on the third base line. The very first pitch of the game nails Ronald Acuna Jr. And now the Braves are coming out of their dugout looking at Urania. And now both benches are going to empty. Brad Snitker's leading the charge.
Okay, so that was earlier this week. Big story in baseball. Ronald Acuna, rookie outfielder for the Atlanta Braves. And the reason I'm touching on this is because I looked at this kind of story is universal to the game. And there is a Red Sox connection here, which we'll get to in a minute. But Ronald Acuna of the Braves had homered in five straight games, three in a row against the Marlins. He steps up in the first inning of the next game against the Marlins in Jose Urena. Or Urena, I'm not sure I'm getting that right. But either way, first pitch of the game drills him like, you know.
A 97-mile-an-hour fastball right into his elbow.
I think it caught him in the arm, right?
Yeah.
I don't even remember. But, you know, no injury or anything of the like. But literally,
but there was a scare. Acuna leaves the game. He had to get an MRI. Thankfully, he was okay. But go on, Mess.
So he did. He just whipped it right at him. There was nothing subtle about it. And before we get to the sort of discussion on it, Murray, the manager's comments after the game are interesting to me, too. First, here's what Don Mattingly, who's the manager of the Marlins now, right? His pitcher hit Acuna on the first pitch of the game. Here's what Mattingly said.
What we said with Jose is, you know, I don't want to see this kid get hit. I mean, he's a great player. He's going to be great for a long time. And for us, he's beat us up. But the way to, this is not the way we want to handle that situation. Obviously, this is not something that we represent or believe in as an organization, or myself too, because I would never want that kid getting hit and cause that kind of problem.
Okay, so first of all, that's Mattingly. Okay, so again, Mattingly's pitcher hit Acuna. Okay, I actually give Mattingly credit for saying it the way he said it. Now, you know what? Let's stop there for a second. First of all, Murray, your overall thoughts on Acuna being hit?
I blew my top when I saw this on Twitter the other night. It's not like I'm sitting there watching Braves games, but the game's most important commodity are their young stars. This kid is a budding young superstar. He's one of the reasons that this Braves team's probably going to the playoffs. And this dirtbag hits him with the first pitch of the game. And if he injures this guy, well, I mean, there goes the Braves' postseason hopes. And if he really injured this guy, maybe there goes, you know, a quarter of his season next year. I have zero tolerance for this. The game should have zero tolerance for this. You want to brush a guy back? You want to make him uncomfortable? Fine, I have no problem with that. But maliciously hitting a guy with the first pitch of the game because he's owned your ass for the beginning of this series, it's mind blowing to me that still happens in this game. All these stupid unwritten rules. It made me so mad. I'm still mad about it. I'm happy the kid's okay, obviously, but this shouldn't happen in baseball in 2018.
It's pathetic, Murray. It's pathetic is what it is.
It's stuff like this that makes, like, it's almost like the players collectively with their stupid unwritten rules are trying to make someone like me hate the game. I hate this kind of stuff.
Okay, and to me, there were a couple of big distinctions to make here. One, if Acuna had slid into a double play aggressively and hurt a second baseman, if he had done something dirty on the base pad,
yeah,
whatever.
I have no problem with eye for an eye.
Drill him. No problem.
But to punish a guy for being good at what he's being paid to do? Oh, go F yourself. I have zero tolerance for that.
Okay, so now the Marlins pitcher, Jose Urena, gets suspended for six games. He has been fined. A lot of people think the suspension should have been worse.
I don't think six games was enough.
So it feels like to me, too, I thought it was bad. I mean, it was Mickey Mouse. That's ticky-tack Mickey Mouse bullcrap is what that is. So what, a guy belts you around and you drill him? So now, and I want to this is the Red Sox angle to me, or connection. If you want to say, and maybe that's the wrong word, but when the Yankees got battered around by the Red Sox in that 15-7 game, that Thursday night game where the Yankees got ahead early and then the Red Sox rallied back, and by the end of that game, the Red Sox were digging into the box, man. It was like they were fighting at the bat rack to get up to the plate. The next night, Luis Severino on the first pitch, do you remember what he did?
Yeah, he went at Mookie Betts, but it was not a pitch that hit him. It was shoulder high. And a lot of Red Sox fans would say, it was at his head. It wasn't at his head. Go look at some of the clips online. You can find them. It was shoulder high. It brushed him back. That's the way to do it. Make a guy uncomfortable. You don't plunk him because he's been ripping your team apart for the game prior or a couple of games prior.
So now to me, that's the distinction, right? That's the distinction. Severino didn't hit bets. He just came up and in, get your ass off the plate. You're hanging out there. We all know we need to pitch you on the outside part of the plate, and every time we throw out there, you're still pulling the ball into the corner. So you know what? Get your ass off the plate. You guys got a little too comfortable in the box last night. What Severino did, totally in bounds. As much as Red Sox fans bitched about it, it was totally in bounds. Now, what Pedro did to some of the guys that hit him over the years, a little different, okay? And the one that always sticks out with Pedro Martinez was the playoff game against the Yankees. Where you remember when he threw the ball behind the head of Kareem Garcia?
Yeah.
And you know why Pedro did that day? Because the Yankees were hitting him hard. No other reason. I will never forget this, Murray, because I covered that game. Red Sox players in the clubhouse after the game were pissed at Pedro.
And rightfully so. Look, he's my favorite Red Sox player of all time, but he went over the line way too many times with this kind of crap.
Oh, so I just think that this thing was Mickey Mouse. Now, I give Mattingly credit for saying, look, that's not the way we want to do it. Okay, now Mattingly's not saying they wouldn't knock him down, but you drill a guy because what? Because he hit a home run off you three nights in a row? Oh, you big babies, get him out, you losers.
And if you read, yeah, and you read more about this Urania, however the hell you say his name, he's a loser. He hit like 26 batters last year. He's already at 11 now after hitting Acuna the other night. Like he's a baby. He's a big, stupid baby.
So the manager of the Braves is a guy named Brad Snitker.
Yes.
Right? Snitker, I think it's S-N-I-T-K-E-R. And the Braves are having a good year. And this Acuna is one of the good young players of the game. He's a lot, I mean, you know, not apples to apples, but he's a lot like the outfielder for the Nationals. Soto. Right? You got two young, power-hitting, dynamic outfielders there, talented kids. Okay, talented kids. So Snitker was asked about it after the game. Here's what he said.
I think it's pretty evident what I thought about it. It's a shame.
Mm-hmm.
This young man is just playing the game, doing what he's loves to do, and that's just a damn shame what happened that first pitch of the game. You know, it's beyond. I don't know. I've had 3 hours to calm down, and all of a sudden I'm not real good right now. He's my kid. I'm gonna protect him.
Okay. I was good with everything he said right up until the last part.
Yeah, we got
He's my kid?
A little overdramatic.
Oh, God, would you put a sock in it? Good God, he's one of your players.
Yeah.
Like, let's not go too far with the whole thing either. You know, all of a sudden he wells up in tears because he treats him like it's his own son? Oh, stop.
He's my kid.
Oh, God, you big baby. Like, it's one thing if John Lester just threw a no-hitter and he's made this great comeback and Terry Francona says, hey, the kid went through a lot. I feel for him. Okay? I get that. Guy gets hit by a pitch and you start crying? There's no crying in baseball,
yeah,
Brad.
There was a lot of other Braves players that were more even keeled about this whole thing. Pissed, but even keeled. The manager went too far by saying they getting choked up and referring to it as his kid. Like,
oh, my
it.
God, please. So I thought Mattingly handled it better than Snitker did. That's all. Mattingly, to me, hey, look, you know, my guy screwed up. That's not how we want to do it here. I give Mattingly a lot of credit for that. I was like Mattingly as a player. By the way, I think he sucks as a manager, but in terms of how he handled that, I liked it. Okay, just my two cents. Steve's in the car. Steve, what do you got?
Hey, guys, great show. So I want to talk a little bit about Rafael Devers. And so he's hitting, what, 242? He's got 16 home runs. But he blows in the field, you know, so much so that we're talking about not trusting him in the playoffs. So I got to ask you, would you, in hindsight, have rather trade Devers for someone like Brad Hand? Because that was what the Padres were asking, right?
So, yeah, that was one of the stories out there. I think John Paul Morosi had it at Fox Sports. Steve, let me ask you, would you have done it?
Yes, I think I would have, because we have so many bats in this lineup right now that we don't need a guy that's on and off the DL all the time and is probably going to end up looking like Paulo Sandoval in 3 years.
So, look, I would tell you that in all probability, I lean no, but not out of principle. I was willing to move Devers potentially if you could get a huge haul for him. Huge. And remember, the Orioles at one point were talking about, like, maybe packaging Machado and Britton. As it turned out, the Orioles did very well trading both of those guys and splitting them up. But part of it is I haven't watched enough of Hand. I mean, he's in San Diego, so who the hell knows? But I do like the fact if you're going to trade Devers, it's either some sort of huge haul or you get multiple guys for him or someone like Hand who's on a multi-year deal. Right? You got to be able to get that kind of player. Kevin's in Smithfield, Rhode Island. What do you got?
Hey, Maz. On your last topic, real quick, before I get to what I was going to say, shouldn't when a MLB pitcher gets suspended, shouldn't it be projected starts as opposed to games? You know, they only pitch every 5 days anyway. But let me continue to where I was going.
Well, so Kevin, just quickly, this is why some people thought it should be 10 games instead of six.
I agree.
That it should have cost them two starts and not one. But go ahead.
Okay. A guy earlier said the 13 team would have beat this team. He's right. Out of his mind. That's like saying the 04 Patriots would have won against the 07 Giants or crap like that. I just don't like the comparison. That's all I got. Have a great day. Thank
okay,
you.
Okay, so look, again, that 2013 team, they had a hell of a year. I mean, really, you want to talk about overachieving teams in Red Sox history, that 2013 is one of them. I mean, that 2013 team was... They played so far above their heads for so long, they deserve credit for it. I mean, as much as I sit here and say they were lucky, they competed their asses off. Really, go back and look at that roster sometime. I mean, they got a great year out of Victorino, who really was close to done. Mike Napoli is a number six hitter in a lineup. I'm trying to think, was Stephen Drew on that team? I don't even remember. I think Stephen Drew was the third shortstop on that team, right? Because Bogaerts ended up playing third. They got a pretty good year out of Stephen Drew, if I remember right. Like, they really hit the jackpot on the moves they made. Jackpot. And so, look, it worked out. I just don't know that it's a philosophy that you can adhere to in the longer term. 617-779-0985. We'll wrap it up with your calls. We will also give you the matchups of the day. And who's doing the night show? Any idea?
Christian Arcand.
Christian Arcand and Matt McCarthy, right? So we'll check in with them as well, too. That's next.